This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, we're featuring a series of entertaining interviews from 2008. On this last day of the year, we're going to hear from the members of two bands, REM and Carbon Silicon. Carbon Silicon isn't nearly as well known as the bands the two co-founders came from. Mick Jones, Carbon Silicon's lead guitarist and singer, was the lead singer of the seminal British punk band The Clash and co-wrote many of the band's songs with Joe Strummer. In fact, in Rolling Stone's list of the 10 best songwriting duos ever, Strummer and Jones were number 3, after Lennon and McCartney and Jagger and Richards. Carbon Silicon's Tony James was the bass player in Generation X, the band that introduced singer Billy Idol. James and Jones formed Carbon Silicon in 2002. They've released a lot of music on the internet, but earlier this year, they released their first full-length CD. It's called The Last Post. When I spoke to them in January, we started with the opening track, which is called The News.
People started caring about what I made, and people started smiling at everyone I made, and people started looking for good instead of bad, realized what they could lose and what they always had. People started growing instead of being crushed, and people started slowing down instead of being rushed. People started looking with very different eyes at this information that comes as a surprise. Good morning, here's the news, and all of it is good. Good evening, here's the news, and all of it is good, and the weather's good.
That's the news from the new Carbon Silicon recording, The Last Post. Mick Jones, Tony James, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi there.
Mick, your voice has such warmth, and it's a different sound than I associate with the more confrontational style of The Clash.
Well, it's the same voice, obviously. You know what I mean? I used to sing more backup vocals, and Joe used to do the main singing, and now I sort of do the main singing and some of the backing vocals on the record. So that has obviously changed. But as far as being on, we're still like, we're not quite as confrontational in terms of horribleness, but in a nice way, I still feel we are.
Got something to say.
Well, you first played together in the pre-Clash days in a band called London SS. What brought you back together?
Well, we've been best friends for 30-something years, you know, and we never set out to form a band. You know, we just started off with one song called MP3 about giving music away on the internet. This was 5 years ago. And, you know, we didn't sit down and go, oh, let's form a band. We just sat down and went, let's write a song together, you know.
We sort of ended up doing it, really.
Yeah, and it grew into a band because we wrote a lot of songs together. And then we thought maybe we'd go and play live and then maybe we'd put a record out.
But it sort of came from out from other things, because we've been talking about it before we even started playing together. Again, we've been talking about how can you do music if you're our age and with any meaning. And we were looking for some meaning in everything that we were trying to do in order to bring some value to it.
Yes.
And so we started like, you know, we could just do this. And we have to get over a lot of horrible truths about ourselves and stuff, but we managed it. And so, like, that stuff don't matter.
Well, let's hear another track from the new Carbon Silicon CD called The Last Post. And I thought we'd hear Caesar's Palace. Before we hear it, why don't you talk about your approach to writing songs together, or specifically to writing this song together?
I just write on the bus and things like that when I'm sitting upstairs, and I'm trying not to get happy slapped.
I often write a lot of stuff while I'm driving. I sit there with that, dangerous though that is. I sit there with a notepad on my on my lap.
That's really dangerous too.
I know, but
especially if you're on the phone with the other hand.
Yeah, I've perfected this way of just scribbling on big sheets of paper on my lap. Something about the rhythm of driving at 70 miles an hour.
That's the same with the bus. It's like gadoon, 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 yes. And that's the way you first get the rhythm. It's actually in the air.
Well, let's hear Caesar's Palace from the new Carbon Silicon CD, and this is Mick Jones and Tony James.
I wish we could see where the dreams all went. I wish we could see where the money got spent. I wish we could see that the greatest crime was to fool all of the people to spend all the time. I wish we could see why we need so much stuff. I
wish we could see that enough is enough. I wish we could see that the going's got tough, 'cause my living is crammed and my past is bad. So value what is necessary, leave what is not, and tell me what I'm doing in another shot. I wish we could see that we're out of control.
That's Caesar's Palace from the new Carbon Silicon CD, and Carbon Silicon features Mick Jones and Tony James. When you first started playing together in the 70s in a band called London SS,
yes.
What was that band like?
MC5.
Oh.
We did MC5 numbers and Flaming Groovies numbers and the Odd Stones number and numbers off Lenny Kaye's Nuggets. It was all just copy
rock
stuff.
So it was like garage rock, hard rock,
and a
political edge.
It was a tribute to the Standells.
Yeah, kind of very garage rock. Not especially political at that stage.
Well, I just really wanted to be in a band, and also that was a very bad name that we had as well. And so, obviously,
SS, you know,
especially we were very ashamed of that. That was like when we were young and stupid, you know.
You know, I have this theory about this band because it never really worked out. That band,
we never played a date or recorded anything or anything.
Somehow, I believe that sort of karma stopped that group being a success, because it would have been a very negative thing to be propagating.
And it was a load of old rubbish anyway.
You look back at the sort of, you know, of your youthful excesses, and you go, this was a stupid idea, guys. But, you know, you look back at that with the experience
and that's
of being 50-year-old.
Especially funny because we're back together again, and every person who ever asks a question, everybody brings that up. And so it's our shame that we have to bear every time. We feel shame, how shameful it is.
Kind
it
wasn't.
We shouldn't really be talking, like, making a big deal about it.
Yes.
So fed up with it.
I know. We see now. We talked 5 minutes about it.
Before you got into a more punk side of things, you were both into glam rock, right?
We like the New York Dolls and Johnny Thunders and those kind of bands. Mm-hmm.
And the Stooges.
So, can you talk about, like, were there two different styles that early in your career you inhabited on stage, both in terms of?
No, not at all, really. No. I mean, I think, you know, we came out of. Remember, the New York Dolls was 73, you know, so the glam rock period was 72, 73. So,
yeah,
you know, it was 75 before we were playing.
And by that time, the platforms had got lower.
Yes.
The tunes, like, because they were so difficult. Sometimes I used to go down, I had big platforms on, then I'd go head first down the stairs.
That's right.
I was glad all that stopped.
It was an uncomfortable look.
So you did the platform thing and the glitter
We did the platforms.
74, 75. It was never popular with our parents.
So we went to Bieber's and we bought a load of ocelot-type material and then we got someone to do us a pair of really tight trousers each.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Almost had to be stitched into these trousers.
Well, Bieber's T-shirts only came in size zero, so you had to be really thin to get them on.
Now, the Sex Pistols were the first, like, really famous punk band. You were already playing when
The Clash were already playing, right? Well,
no,
Clash
were playing. About a few months before. They were already going, and there was a couple of other groups that were going but didn't have the direction of under the label of punk or something like that. There was bands like The Stranglers were around before, Eddie and the Hot Rods, The Jam was sort of playing already, and there was a load of bands, but they hadn't quite made the proper transition. But the Sex Pistols, when you see them, it was like all over, completely different thing. You know what I mean? They changed things, and that was like the new thing that came in after the Pistols, and all the groups that had come before it, they sort of weren't keyed up, if you know what I mean. And then, like, the groups that came after the Pistols, well, there was like a few of them that were, like, kind of good. But we were always saying that everybody can do it, but you still needed to have a bit of an idea or something.
Because the ironic thing was that look was so powerful, yet people were able to change overnight, because if you had long hair, it was really easy to just go and cut it all off and rip the arms out of your T-shirt, and then you were on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If they'd been the other way around and you had to grow your hair,
it would have taken years. Right? But it did actually, and because England's only a small place, you know, Britain's a pretty small place, it spread like wildfire around the country.
And it had taken a while to understand that to be different, suddenly you could have short hair and ripped T-shirts and tight trousers instead
of long
hair.
All that stuff was really important because everybody had flares, right? They looked at you and went, like, bloody hell, if you had straight trousers, it was outrageous.
Mick, can I ask you how you first met Joe Strummer?
Well, Joe was playing in this group, the 101ers.
I mean, we
London.
Used to go and see him together, That's didn't right. we, all the time. So,
and 101 was like the address of the squat that he was living in?
Yeah. 101 Waterton Road.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they were quite a happening group, really, and he was a really good... And so one day, the rest of us, we approached him, like the manager, and the manager just went to one of his gigs. We all went to one of his gigs, and he went round back and said, I want you to meet these guys, and that was us. And so we kind of like, we arranged that he, do you want to come round and meet us? And we were all in a squat in Shepherd's Bush, and he came round. And that was when we first probably met him. Although we'd seen him in the Dole office beforehand and also down Portobello Road, like, as you do, you know, sort of nodding, all right, but nothing more. And then he kind of come round to where we were at. And then he said, do you want to join this group, these guys? And Joe could already see the way things were going and went, yeah, I'm in.
So I guess, you know, hearing you sing on Carbon Silicon, I'm wondering, like, why didn't you see yourself as the lead singer of your band?
Oh, you know why? Because I started on like a stylophone, you know, this kind of electronic organ that you hear on David Bowie's Space Oddity. And then I moved up to drums, and then I moved up to bass. And then I thought, I can handle a couple more strings here. And then I started playing guitar. And so I thought it was always cooler just to play the guitar and just like you didn't have to work so hard and pressure wasn't on you. And then after Joe went, sort of stepped up and started doing it. But I always wanted to just do guitar and sing a few backups.
So you didn't want the pressure of being the front man?
Or anything, no.
See, now you know.
You were actually forced out of the band.
Imagine that. That's your own band you get chucked out of. Being chucked out of bands ain't a big deal. It took years to get over, though, traumatically. Yeah. But it used to happen all the time. It was called, can we take you for a drink? And that meant we'd go for a drink, and then it means you're getting fired. Yeah. If you're in a band, it's like, that used to happen all the time, you know. So just we got fed up with each other, basically. Yeah. But it was loads of fun. But in the end, you know what I mean? I think the bigger we got, the more screwed up we became, you know what I mean? Because we were trying really hard and we couldn't handle it. It was just too much for us. And the bigger we got, the worse we felt.
How much of like a crisis, an identity crisis even, was it for you?
It was very bad for me. It was so bad. And it was right around the time of the Notting Hill Carnival. And so I couldn't walk around without seeing somebody I knew.
Naturally, my phone's ringing.
And then I kind of tried to disguises for a while. I dyed my hair, put glasses on.
You look like
I grew a beard. I looked like Manson. I went to Paris. I was afraid to see anybody. It was a messed up period, yeah. And then we soon became friends again, that we just never got
That's
back
right.
together again as a group. But
You were putting BAD together pretty quickly, weren't you? And you were helping me
almost
to put...
straight away.
Helping me put together Zig Zig Sputnik.
Well, I just want to play one really classic Clash record while you're here. So I thought we'd play London Calling. And Mick Jones, you co-wrote this. Would you talk a little bit about the song, like getting the song together?
Well, there was, at the time of writing it, there was this map that they showed you. If Thames Barrier ever bursts its banks, they showed you what part of London would be underwater. And it was like completely all round, all the West End and
everywhere we live
and everything like that. If they ever broke our banks, we'd all be flooded. And that was like the original kind of apocalyptic message of the song.
But I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning out.
That's The Clash featuring guitarist Mick Jones with their 1979 recording London Calling. My guests are Mick Jones and Tony James, co-founders of the band Carbon Silicon. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are the founders of the band Carbon Silicon, Mick Jones and Tony James. Mick Jones was the lead guitarist of The Clash and co-wrote many of their songs. Tony James played bass in Generation X and Zig Zig Sputnik. Tony, I have a question for you about Zig Zig Sputnik, and this is going to be about how you looked in it. You know, you had talked before about how during punk, hair got shorter, and you could change your look. You could just, like, cut your hair and make it short. But in Zig Zig Sputnik, you had these, like, really long, spiky things piled up high on your head. Yes. Was that your real hair?
Well, that's why that band took 5 years to get together.
It took 5 years in makeup.
Why did you head in that direction?
You know what? The colored hair were extensions. They were tied into our hair.
Okay.
And actually, the singer, it was Degville's idea because, you know, he had shared an apartment with Boy George at the time, and they both had this freaky, super extended hair. You know, and it was actually made of bits of fur, like out of these. You used to buy these goat's hair rugs, cut it into little pieces, dye it pink, and tie it into your own hair with pipe cleaners. Hence the word rug. Slang for wigs in English. So all those extensions were tied into my hair, which was long, with pipe cleaners. So it was possible to take the extensions out, you know, on a weekend if you were having a day off.
Thank you for joining us for hair tips.
Yes, but generally having 2 meters of pink hair hanging down your back was a pain in the arse, as were walking around in girls' high-heeled shoes. So it was a bit of a sort of a glam rock revisited, but it was a startling look, you know, and again, set it aside from everything else at the time.
How did it feel to go into that look after coming out of punk?
Well, it was, you know, again, it was shocking because suddenly everybody had short hair and everybody looked normal. So to suddenly look like this space monster was totally fresh, you know. So it was a startling look around London. Not so popular with getting girlfriends, I have to tell you.
Why do you think that was?
Because we look ridiculous.
So now you're on stage looking just like yourself.
Also, I have to say, you end up having sex, and then you get out of bed, and there's half a pile of pink hair still in the bed.
You wouldn't take it off for your intimate moments.
It was a real hazard look for groupies, I tell you.
you wouldn't take all that stuff off.
Well, no, well, that would be really disappointing.
It takes too long.
They liked it.
Put it all on the side of the bed.
In moments of extreme passion.
In a glass on the side of the bed.
Girls would pull your hair and it would come out in their hands. This is before I was married, I have to tell you.
Oh, of course. So now on stage, you look like yourself.
We do. We look like ourselves.
And eventually we found ourselves.
Yes.
Is it a more...
Hair's not an issue now for
us. Do you feel any more...
No longer an issue.
No longer an issue.
Do you feel any more vulnerable or naked just performing as yourselves without any special clothes or persona on stage?
Actually, I find it now more comfortable going on stage than ever because actually I'm getting up and I'm being really me and it's just about the guitar playing and the singing and the songs. It's not about the image suddenly, although I suppose you could say there is an image, i.e. an image of 50-year-old guys being themselves. But this is not pantomime like Sputnik, and it's not an aggressive look like punk was. It's us being just ourselves.
Mick, another question from an earlier part of your life. You were largely raised by your grandmother.
That's right.
And when you were in The Clash, and The Clash was really big, you were still going home to your grandmother's place for...
Very, very often, yeah. I sometimes get myself a flat for a few months and then I ended up going back to the...
For some people, it's so peculiar when you go back to, like, the bedroom that you grew up in after you're an adult.
I know.
And it makes you feel like a child again. So what was it like after being on the road with The Clash to then go home to the bedroom you grew up in at your grandmother's place?
Well, it was it was great, actually. Well, sort of where I learned to play guitar in the same room. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Because
I was like spent a year solid in there playing along with people's records first, and so it was like very good. And then before that, I lived with my grandmother, her sister, and sister-in-law. So it was like I was brought up by like three old ladies. So I suppose it does sound quite peculiar. Mm. But
what about when you signed your first record deal and you paid for your grand to go to America to see your mother because your mother's American?
Yeah, that's right.
And we pretended your grandmother's flat was our flat for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was great. We had our Rat Pack pad, and it was fantastic.
We'd go
we were pretending it was our flat.
We'd go clubbing and bring girls back and say we had this really cool penthouse flat. It's really his grandmother's house.
How'd your grandmother react when she came home?
We moved it all back again
when
she got back.
We knew she was coming back, and she didn't know.
Well, it's really been great to talk with you both. I love the new CD. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope people get some positivity from it.
Mick Jones and Tony James co-founded the band Carbon Silicon. Our interview was recorded in January when they released their CD, The Last Post. Here's another track from it. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
I sigh, I sigh, I sigh. There's a conspiracy and trying for a coup. I think we should be free to do what we want to do.